Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Folgers in your cup or whatever your beverage of choice may be. Sounds good to me on a rather wintry mid-December morning here in Marion, Ohio. WWGH Radio, the talking place, welcoming you to another hour of great live programming. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy. Hopefully you enjoyed my technology-oriented show last hour. We shift gears a bit this hour and talk current events, interesting highlights from American history, and of course, always some controversy or two. Presidential scholar and historian Dr. Ronald Fineman will be joining me. Also be having some commentary from good friend of mine and regular commentator Brandon Oak. So please keep your virtual listening device right where it is, or your radio, if you listen the old-fashioned way, because that's very cool also, I can assure you that your eardrums will thank you. WWGH Radio, the talking place. Feel free to email me with any suggestions about future content on this or other shows. Adam at WWGH1071.com. It's a bit chilly here in the wonderful Buckeye State, but if we go south several hours by car or 2 or 3 hours by a big jet airplane, we land in southeastern Florida, and that's where our resident political commentator and presidential expert, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, hangs his hat. Ron, you mentioned before we talked on the air that it's been slightly chilly there in Florida, but not quite as chilly as it is here in Marion.
Well, you know, first of all, thank you for inviting me again, Adam. It was in the 40s this morning, and it only got up to the 60s. So comparatively, it's been quite cold. But Atlanta, of course, had snow, so at least we didn't have that here.
Yeah, we had about 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch based upon the specific location over the weekend. So not too bad. Roads a bit slippery, but they're clearing up at this point. And winter is definitely in full force. Not a lot of warmth scheduled for the next week or two, but at least it does feel like Christmas with that kind of weather, atmospheric conditions.
Now, Ron, yes, my son in Washington, D.C., told me that they had 3 to 4 inches. So it has been enough snow to be noticeable, certainly,
yeah,
but not
just based upon how north you are. D.C. is a little south of us here in mid-Ohio, but they got a few inches. Texas was like in the 70s one day, and some areas got snow. Parts of the southeast got it, North Carolina, Georgia. So definitely an early taste of old man winter, but if the weather didn't change a little bit and keep you guessing, that wouldn't be quite as fun as it is, especially here in the great Midwest. Want to wish you, Ron, first early happy birthday, as the big day is coming up, I believe, this Sunday.
Yes, on Sunday, December 17th, will be my birthday. And it's hard to believe how the years fly by, but they do, yes.
Yep, well, you know, as I say, I don't get older, I get better. And that's
well, thank you very much for your birthday wishes ahead of time.
That's a good philosophy to employ. Many topics to discuss, Ron. We always wonder, what are we going to talk about this week? And then we take a look at the news and realize, well, we better talk fast or we'll be talking until your birthday. Definitely.
Yeah.
A big one, certainly, which has come up in the last week or so, is the capital of Israel. And apparently what Donald Trump and his people want to recognize, and what we may think would be commonplace, they're not necessarily the same thing. Any thoughts on that? What did you think, Ron, when you first heard about the Jerusalem issue?
think it was a mistake to do so, because no other nation recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Now, I'm Jewish, so it's not like I'm not pro-Israel, but I do not think that since it's a subject of negotiation between the Israelis and the Palestinians about the future of Jerusalem, which is what it was, that this is a smart thing to do, and no other nation has its, recognizes the capital as being Jerusalem, rather than they have Tel Aviv, and I think it's going to stir up animosity and hatred and bloodshed and terrorism, and I think it's going to be much more difficult for people who want to be tourists to Israel to go, and it's just going to stir up a lot of hatred among different religious groups, and I just don't think it's a smart idea, but it's been done by Donald Trump. It was avoided by the last few presidents, his best. So I think it's a big mistake, but with Trump, foreign affairs, he's done such a disaster in so many areas, so it's not really surprising.
You know, one of the fun components of live radio is you never know which interesting person might suddenly make his or her way into the studio. And today is one of those occasions. A regular commentator of mine, Brandon Oak, has joined the conversation. So, Brandon, how are you this morning?
Oh, just wonderful. How about yourself, Adam?
Glad to hear that. Ron, can you hear Brandon okay?
Yes, I can, and I say hello to Brandon. How are you doing today?
Oh, wonderful. How about you, sir?
I'm fine.
Do a sound check again. In live radio, you never quite know, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, probably coming from my science education. It's got to be correct to the nearest nanometer and microsecond, and I think we have accomplished just that. Before we go to the next topic, we were discussing the Jerusalem issue with Ron, a big news headline over the last week or so. You follow current events, Brandon. Anything you wanted to talk to the professor about or ask him?
Well, not at the moment, but I suppose I would gladly listen to whatever the professor has to say about current events.
You wrote in your blog, Ron, theprogressiveprofessor.com, headline, "Growing Erratic Behavior by Trump Alarming, a Sign of Mental Deterioration, Dementia, or Bipolar Disease." Now, we've talked about this on the show multiple times.
Correct. Yeah. And as I said, one does not have to be a mental health professional to see that Donald Trump has signs of alarming mental deterioration, either dementia or bipolar disease. Such evidence is seen by many psychologists and psychiatrists as dangerous signs of the threat of Donald Trump in the presidency, leading to possible foreign wars against North Korea and Iran, and breaking up of the long-term alliances with Europe, Japan, and South Korea.
Is there anything that's happened, including possibly the Jerusalem controversy, over the last week or two that strengthened your opinion or modified it at all?
Well, I think that decision, plus his putting that extremist video on his Twitter that got the British Prime Minister May very upset, and just generally that he seems with his Twitter aims to be off the wall. He really does.
And that was, again, from the blog that you wrote on the 10th last Sunday. So it seems like, yes, we have to revisit Donald Trump and his mental state almost every show, because based upon what may have occurred, that could certainly affect our opinion. With Brandon Oak here, regular commentator in the studio. Brandon, what do you think about Donald Trump's mental state? Do you agree with Ron that he might have dementia or bipolar? Or what's your assessment?
Well, that seems to be a bit of a it's an oddly complicated question. I mean, I was going to ask the professor's, opinion on Great Britain wanting to basically nix his whole visit in the coming few weeks or so.
Yes, that's a good question, Brandon. I would say, well, I think it's supposed to be a few months, but I think he should not be invited to Britain, because I don't think the way he's behaved, he should be in the presence of the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth I, and all the stuff that is done, informal kinds of visits. And it's going to cause a lot of demonstrations. And I honestly think his behavior is such he should not be invited. And that may seem strange. He's our president, but I don't think he deserves the respect of the British people with the way he's behaved. And he's alienated the British prime minister. He's alienated the German chancellor. He's alienated the French president. president and so many other countries, and I think that it should not be rewarded. So you certainly have to deal with him, but I don't think an official state visit, which I am certain will lead to complications and embarrassments and displays of misbehavior, I don't think that should be promoted. If it was up to me, I would cancel it from the part of Britain. And there's been a debate in the parliament about that, but May, the Prime Minister May says it's going to move ahead, but I would think it should be reconsidered.
But isn't it important for the U.S. president to visit countries, especially ones that we're allies of? I would think that Donald Trump not visiting the United Kingdom would be a major event in the presidency. We talk about Nixon, for example, with his foreign policy, many overseas trips. Now we have a president who can't even visit a country that's one of our biggest allies.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Adam, and also Brandon, but I look at it this way, that he has antagonized and alienated the British government a number of times, have been very upset with him, and I think he would have to somehow make it clear, which he will not do, that he would clear up the way he behaves, and even whatever he's thinking, that he acts appropriately, but I don't think he knows how to control himself. That's the problem. So that's why I be in favor of him not being invited, but I agree it would be a tumultuous thing to... It's going to be a controversial visit if he does go, because he will not be under control, and he might even embarrass the Queen. I mean, imagine that. And everybody's always been proper with the Queen, whatever you think of her and her position, and I just worry that he would not act appropriately.
Seems like this month of December, Ron, we often think of the holiday season as a time when news slows down, but in the Trump administration, it's probably the other way around. In fact, I think
yes.
your blogs from the last week or two have been especially insightful. As you know, one of my interests is the succession of presidents and who might be president if the current one no longer sits in the Oval Office. I mean, you and I lived through President Nixon resigning and his appointed successor to the also resigned Spiro Agnew. Gerald Ford became president, and then he, of course, lost to Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter II, I believe.
And Julia, actually, full Julia.
Now, you wrote in your blog last week about Mike Pence, who may, along with the aforementioned Spiro Agnew, could be considered one of the... let's say, least professional vice presidents. Your headline, Mike Pence and Spiro Agnew, two crooked vice presidents.
Question mark, though. I didn't say for sure. Well,
right.
Because there's growing evidence, at least from what I've read, that he knew what was going on with Michael Flynn, about Mike Pence, and that he's been lying, and that could become an issue for Robert Mueller to investigate. So he might face a situation where he cannot, be... or maybe cannot last long as president if he's involved in this Russia collusion scandal.
And that's very different from anything Ford may have had to do with Watergate and pardoning Nixon. We're looking at Mike Pence. You know, we think he's all religious and conservative and family man. I mean, whether or not you like his beliefs, you at least think he'd be ethical. But what we're finding out is it might be the other way around. And
well, as I said, this is very different than Gerald Ford, who ensured by his words and actions that he could not be accused of any involvement in Watergate. But I think Mike Pence was the head of the transition committee, and he knew all about Michael Flynn. He had to know, and yet Michael Flynn was made national security advisor for 25 days or 24 days. So I think, it's already clear that Mueller investigation is looking into the case of Mike Pence, and he could be, and I did have a question mark, he could be crooked and be forced out, and that's why the next day I said in the blog, are we on the way to President Paul Ryan, who I implore, but it could be that it would have to go to the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who right now is Paul Ryan of Wisconsin.
Now, a question for you, Ron, as the historical scholar and person with much more knowledge of the presidency than certainly I possess. You can't impeach the vice president, right? But can there be an impeachment where both Donald Trump and Mike Pence are subject to removal? How would that work if we find that Mike Pence...
Impeachment could occur to the president, the vice president, or a cabinet member, or a circuit court judge, or a district court judge, or a Supreme Court justice. Any of them can be. It's very rare. Never been a vice president impeached, but a vice president could be impeached, yes.
Do you think that at some time, because we're both thinking that Trump will not be president past, let's say, spring of 2018.
That's my belief. I've said it from the beginning. I still think he will be gone by May 27th, which is the 492 days of Zachary Taylor, the third shortest presidency who died in office in 1850. I still believe that's going to happen. I think the events that are going on make it more clear that his time is short.
Do you think that there could be an impeachment brought against the president and vice president at the same time due to this evidence against Pence? What do you see happening if let's say Trump gets impeached or is forced to resign, like Nixon, for example, then Pence becomes president?
I think he's going to resign. I don't think impeachment will occur in 18 because the Republicans won't let it happen. I do think that he will resign, and probably Mike Pence will become president, but then there might be questions about him, and he might be investigated or might be under investigation, and that's why it could go to the third-ranking person, which is the Speaker of the House, in this case, Paul Ryan.
Right. Interesting scenario, leading to another one of my topics that I probably find most interesting discussing with you. Trump could resign, Pence could become president, and then he could be forced to resign because once he's in the hot seat, his already tenuous position gets, well, it's not a word, but we'll make up a word, tenuouser. And then he resigns. And then we'd have seven former presidents living, which would be very, very interesting.
That would be, we even six if we had Trump out, it'd be six former presidents, yes. We've never had six, we've only had the idea. That's funny.
Right. But that could happen. Again, the president's always in the hot seat. And you don't know, you know, we don't know that much about Pence. Again, he obviously has very conservative Christian beliefs. But we think economically, I mean, whether or not you agree with him, at least he has some qualification. But now we're finding out that the guy may not be quite as, let's say, clean cut as we think we were led to believe. And then it's a case where he could be at the Oval Office and not last long because he's forced to resign. And then we have President Paul Ryan, who, as I recall, was a running mate for a previous Republican candidate.
Romney in 2012, yes.
Right. So he may, you know, it's almost a case of be careful what you wish for. And that happens in politics sometimes. Now,
one thing I want to point out is if Mike Pence became president and he's under threat of being pushed out, still the 25th Amendment comes into play where the vice president could pick, if he became president, his, you know, the vice president to replace himself with the approval of the House and Senate, of course, after hearings, as happened with Gerald Ford, after Agnew resigned. So the theory is Pence would be picking a new vice president, and if he or she was confirmed at the end of his term, that new vice president would become president, not Paul Ryan. Unless there was no new vice president, then it would be Paul Ryan.
Right. So many possible scenarios, but these are possibilities, right? They aren't just, there are a lot more than just what ifs. These kind of things could happen. So it looks like as exciting as December is, spring of 2018 could really be interesting and a bit tumultuous.
Yes, and in my mind, when I think of who might President Pence, I think we've discussed this maybe not on the radio show, but on, I think privately. I think somebody like a Nikki Haley would be a great choice to be vice president, and she's one of the few people in the Trump presidency that I would feel confidence in to put close to the Oval Office.
Interestingly enough, our other commentator here, Brandon Oak, well, Brandon's a native of Indiana, the part that's near Cincinnati. And so he certainly may have a bit of a personal interest. As a native Hoosier, Brandon, any thoughts on Mike Pence? What do you think of the guy?
Do we want to go personal stance or just overall thinking? I mean, from personality and alone, I don't see him as a better choice versus Donald Trump. I know that's sad to say, isn't it? But from what I've seen for the past year and a half that... Well, almost 2 years now that Donald Trump has been in office, I would say Pence, from what I knew before, because you really don't hear much about him nowadays, not nearly as much as, say, our lovely orange-haired president, Sherbert, as I call him, Agent Orange, kind of cool. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, Pence seems kind of like he's just kind of waiting to jump in action as soon as Trump is gone, and his stance is on... affecting, you know, lifestyles or, you know, social aspects of other people. I don't see him as any better choice, and I don't think Paul Ryan's much better either. So hopefully there's a loophole somewhere in the system to where we can kind of skip between the past the Speaker of the House and hope for the best at this point kind of thing.
Rod, it seems like what we've learned in our history books, and you've studied, you know, for a long time, about the presidential succession could really become reality. We're not quite sure who might be in the Oval Office, let's say, even 6 months from now. And it may not be quite as simple.
It could be Pence, it could be Ryan, or it could be someone picked Pence if he becomes president and confirmed by the House and Senate before Pence might leave, yes. And again, there are very few people I would feel confidence in, but the U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley would be right off a short moment would be my choice, my first thought. Not the only one, but I think probably one of the best choices, and it would give us our first woman president if that kind of a scenario occurred.
Yeah, honestly, I think Nikki Haley would be great, and she's certainly more moderate. And you like the coolness factor, being female, being of Indian descent. There are many things about her that are unique. I mean, she's very, very smart and, you know, not bad looking, definitely young. She's in her 40s. And I would think economically she's probably going to be consistent with my beliefs. And certainly socially she's much more to the left of someone like Mike Pence. And so that could...
Absolutely. Also, I think Susan Collins, Senator Collins of Maine, would be a good choice. But I'm not sure Mike Pence would pick someone like her. She's the most moderate Republican in the Senate. But I think she would also be good. So there are a couple of good women candidates there to be a potential vice president and maybe a future president.
So the scenario where we may be going from someone like Trump to someone totally opposite, with possibly Mike Pence as a president in the middle. There's so many possibilities. I tell you, this is an exciting time to be doing this show, to be following the news. No wonder it seems like I look at CNN.com probably 50 times, literally 50 times more than I did a couple of years ago, because every day there's something new happening, and you never quite never quite know.
You're correct.
With this possible scenario, Ron, of who knows who might be in the Oval Office next year, do you think that this person would be looking to pardon Trump and possibly pardon Pence? That, I guess that's another wrinkle to the story.
Well, the problem is that whoever was succeeded, if Pence succeeds and he pardons Trump, I think that dooms him for having any chance to stay in the presidency beyond the term. It's just like Gerald Ford. And if someone else in the middle, like a Susan Collins or a Nikki Haley, did the same thing, I think whoever would pardon at this point, it would probably undermine that person's ability to be elected. He or she would be president, but not pass the term.
So that would definitely add another wrinkle to the whole tale. Now, in your blog on December 6th, Ron, you talked about a possible president, Paul Ryan. What are your thoughts about Paul Ryan possibly being in the Oval Office? Do you think he's qualified? How would it affect current events?
Well, qualified in the sense that he has experience in government, certainly more than Donald Trump, and actually probably just about as much as Mike Pence, but you know, way back in 2012 on my blog, I was ripping into Paul Ryan, and I thought he was a terrible choice for Mitt Romney that I wrote about, and I got a lot of writing me attacked because I said that against Paul Ryan, more than almost anything I've ever written. But I think he may very well have been aware of Russian collusion. There's some indication that he might have been aware of it. And the thing is, he has an Ayn Rand libertarian philosophy, and his desire is to privatize Medicare and Social Security, and then the concept of government assistance to the needy through Medicaid, food stamps, and aid to dependent children. And I just think the man is monstrously terrible that he has this libertarian attitude, which I think is not the answer. So he's not a theocracy type like Mike Pence, but I think he's also a terrible choice. I really do think he's a terrible choice. But he is of experience in government, that I admit.
So he's good on experience and as a veteran politician, but his views definitely are not close to what you would support.
No, he's different than Mike Pence, but they're both terrible, and so is Orrin Hatch, next in line, the president pro tempore, who's going to be 84 next year, and I think he's definitely got dementia. He's making really wacko, crazy statements in the last couple of months, and he's been there half his life, 42 years. As I wrote earlier, people in the 80s should finish their term and not run again. And I say the same thing about Dianne Feinstein, who I might like more, but I just think when you're going to be 85 next year, why should you take up the seat in theory another 6 years to 91? We need new leadership, and I don't think Orrin Hatch would be a good choice at his age to be in the presidency. And I just, and I also don't like what he's doing about the Utah National Monuments, that he's convinced Trump to cut back, that my son David is involved in trying to save the Conservation Lands Foundation that I wrote about. So every choice is bad. I would rather have a new vice president who would be someone, of course, who I might like, such as Nikki Haley or Susan Collins. But I don't think I don't know what's going to happen. But choices now are just horrific.
You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor and Brandon Oak, a frequent commentator on my shows here at The Talking Place, WWGH Radio 107.1, frequency modulation, or broadcasting online all over the great world we reside in, WWGH1071.com.
I had one thing, by the way. I to put into this mix John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, who I think would be an exceptional choice to be a new vice president under the 25th Amendment. So I must add him in after we had two women there. So I would say John Kasich, but I don't know if Pence or Ryan would pick him as a vice president under the 25th Amendment because he's been too much of a critic of Trump. But I just think Kasich would be an excellent choice as well. In fact, in some ways, maybe even better.
Do you think having a president from Indiana and a VP from Ohio, don't they try to be a little more geographically diverse, or would that really matter at all?
Not really, because if you look back, Al Gore was from Tennessee and Bill Clinton from Arkansas, and they actually border on each other. So, and that worked. So it's not a bad idea, but it's not essential. And you got to remember, the Midwest is the part of the country where elections are decided. Remember that.
Speaking of states bordering, Ron, you know how I am with lead-ins. A state that borders the Sunshine State, where you hang your hat, Florida, is, of course, Alabama. And there has been a lot of controversy in the heart of Dixie over the last week or two. People are boycotting Alabama. A lot of stuff going on Facebook and otherwise. From an article a couple days ago in CNN, Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore denied that he has ever molested anybody and repeated that he has never met the women who have accused him of sexual assault. And that was in an interview with The Voice of Alabama Politics. He said, "I did not know them. I had no encounter with them. I never molested anyone. And for them to say that, I don't know why they're saying it, but it's not true." Ron, do you think that Roy Moore, like Pinocchio, his nose is growing, or do you believe him? What's your thought when you heard that?
He's a massive liar like Donald Trump, claiming all the women that have accused him that he claims has not done so. Roy Moore, there's been more people coming on that are friends of some of those women who said they told him about it years ago. I mean, this is not a great conspiracy. It's reality. And Doug Jones, that seat, and I would argue, and I put on Facebook, not a blog entry, that Alabama should be boycotted economically, and people should not go on vacations in Alabama until this man, if he's in office, is removed, because he is a disgrace. I absolutely think he's a disgrace, and he should not be allowed to have that Senate seat. And interestingly, Senator Shelby, the other senator from Alabama, who's a Republican, definitely said he did not vote for him because he only voted for an independent. Put in a name, as he said, that Alabama deserves better. And this is their senator, Shelby, Rich Shelby, saying that. And Doug Jones is a solid person who's been involved in good causes and helped to get in the conviction of people involved in the 1963 Birmingham church bombing that killed four black girls, and it took the 2001 and 2002. But he got it done. He's a very decent man. Alabama deserves to have Doug Jones in the Senate. But what will happen, I cannot say, but I hope for the sake of Alabama's reputation that they elect Doug Jones.
We have Brandon Oak in the studio with us discussing current events and other things that are pressing and intriguing issues of the day on this nice late fall Tuesday morning in mid-Ohio. Brandon, you've probably been following the Roy Moore story, the Roy Moore shenanigans. Do you believe him, or what's your thought when you hear about him denying that these acts ever occurred?
Well, with given other current events with such similar cases, I'm just unlikelier to believe what he has to say. I mean, at this point in this I guess, so-called day and age, especially given recent events. I'm unlikely to, you know, he's probably just trying to cover up, as many have, and not likely to succeed.
So as Judge Judy would say, gentlemen, liar, liar, pants on fire. And that would probably, that would probably sum it up. Let's go to another politician in the headlines, Al Franken. You've been following him at all, Brandon?
What I know of, besides his SNL writing and acting and such, what I heard on a, I guess, a, what is it, PRNR radio, I believe, essentially that he would have to be a kind of a scapegoat, so to speak, to give way to getting rid of Donald Trump. That's basically all I've heard up to this point. Other than that, I would like to hear the professor's standpoint on all this.
Ron, you wrote a few days ago in your blog that Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and other women senators were wrong to force Senator Franken out of the Senate without having an ethics investigation first, with clear-cut evidence of sexual harassment and abuse by the Minnesota senator. So you feel that he is jumping the gun and has been bullied into this resignation?
I do think that the whole group of women senators have been bullying by doing this. They should have an ethics investigation. It seems like the person, the first charge, apparently is a Republican who is a model and all that, and an actress, but that she may have lied about what she said about what, you know, about that picture of him touching her breast. It might have been a stage photograph that she knew about it, and, you know, other things. It just seems, it doesn't seem like a solid enough case to have a person resign without an ethics investigation, which is what he wanted. And I think Kirsten Gillibrand, I think what she thinks is about, yes, she's concerned about sexual harassment, and I feel the same way, but I think she's showing her ambition to be running for president in 2020. She certainly is a possible candidate, and honestly, when she was picked to replace Hillary Clinton by the governor of New York at that time, Secretary of State, I thought, why in the world did he pick this congresswoman? There were other congresswomen or congressmen in New York State that would have been far better. And I've never been all that impressed with her. And now more recently, you know, the Clintons helped her out a lot. And now she came out and said, which I might agree with, that in 1998, Bill Clinton should have resigned over the scandal, the sex scandal. He did. But to bring it up now and slap Hillary Clinton in the face after how much her contacts Kirsten Gillibrand with the Clintons, and then to go after and to push Franken out and get the others to join her, I'm very disillusioned. And basically, I would not support Kirsten Gillibrand or vote for her if she was the nominee in 2020. I just think it's a terrible thing that it's a rush to judgment. I'm not saying he wouldn't have to be leading the Senate, but he should not be forced out in this kind of a matter. I think it's wrong.
Now, we've seen so many politicians and celebrities being accused of sexual indiscretions. It's almost a case where we may joke about it, but who's going to be accused of it next? Now we have Franken, who's always been a bit controversial, certainly, kind of resigning in a haste, and kind of wonder what's going on. Now, you wrote that Gillibrand had a very conservative record in her upstate New York district and then suddenly became very liberal, a situation which seemed suspicious. Now, Donald Trump, of course, he used to be a Democrat. He certainly changed his politics. So we do see that. But this 180 that she did, what are your thoughts about that, and how does that relate to the situation?
Well, you know, I was talking to my son David on Sunday about this, New York, not Manhattan, and that she had to vote in a way that would be more for the Hudson River Valley area where she represented. And I said, you're right on that, but I just don't think her record in the House was so great that she had to be the one to be selected by David Paterson, who, by the way, you know, was a terrible governor, I would say. I was never impressed with David Paterson either as governor of New York. But there's a point there, and, of course, everybody has to vote their district, so, or their state. So like my son said, if Doug Jones wins, he cannot be very liberal for a Democrat. He probably would, and I even said, he'd probably have to be the most conservative Democrat, more than Joe Manchin of West Virginia, in order to survive. So there is that fact of where you represent, that you have to, if you represent, but if you represent the state of New York, which overall, because of the downstate Manhattan and New York City and Long Island area, is liberal, that it is a different circumstance. So I understand that, but I'm just not very happy with her record. And to me, she pushed Franken out too soon without a hearing. And again, he might have had to leave, but I think he was deserving of a hearing and not being forced out as he
Ron, do you see all these accusations of, again, politicians, celebrities? It seems like we hear a new one every day, if not a couple every day, that this may become a pattern where people are forced out of office or kind of forced to admit something, even if it's an exaggeration or not true.
I wanted to mention that, we want to always believe the women, but you can't always believe that every woman who comes up with an accusation that is really true. You can't take that viewpoint either, because that makes all men victims. So it's a problem, really, that how do you judge what is real? That is the problem. I don't know what the answer is to that.
It looks like we'll be rewriting that answer as we see these accusations. I can't remember in my lifetime that every day I pick up the paper and someone new is involved in a scandal. It's absolutely incredible.
You're right.
And again, some of these celebrities too. We brought up Richard Dreyfuss, but he'd be the last person I think would ever be involved in a scandal like this. So
and Dustin Hoffman too.
Yeah, I mean, a case where, as my mama always said, truth is stranger than fiction. And you never know. And as I say again, I find myself going to news websites a lot more often. And as I see it, nothing is going to surprise me anymore. I at this point, I don't know what's going to surprise me.
I want to mention something. A friend of mine, I was told by George H.W. Bush, shown to be doing this in his retirement recently, but also when he was president, which I was a little surprised by. So it's not just now as an old guy that he's doing it. So I joked with my friend. I said, well, that's one old president that's been accused of sexual harassment. When are we going to hear about Jimmy Carter? And he laughed. He said, probably soon. And I said, but you noticed? He heard nothing about Jimmy Carter. And willing to bet, nobody's ever going to accuse Jimmy Carter of sexual harassment. I'm curious to see. But it's been a long time, and his name has not come up, which I find interesting.
Certainly, as we said, Carter has become one of the most interesting and well-known former presidents. Of course, he's been alive a long time after he left office. But
longer than any president.
But his legacy, that's it's still...
And it's the same age as Bush, just a few months younger. But Bush now looks somehow besmirched by the scandal a little bit. But Carter has not been yet, and I'm hoping he won't be, you know.
We have Brandon Oak in the studio with us on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Any questions you had for Ron or any thoughts, Brandon, about what we've been talking about with all these scandals?
Oh, just a few. I've been waiting for this just for a while. I've refrained from social media aspect for this, but it just seems as of late, it seems to be somewhat trendy to basically call out every male in Hollywood, as it seems. Yes, some deserve it, but just imagine now, again, because it's become slightly trendy, I would say that there is, it should be questioned as, you know, the actual sources of the accusations and whatnot. What do you think about that, Ron?
I agree with you. Because there's been cases we hear about even in college campuses. Yes, there is rape on college campuses a lot, but there's cases where women claim something and later we find out it didn't happen. As at Duke University, for instance, a couple of years back. So you don't know when to trust what the accusations. And meanwhile, people's reputations are being damaged. So it's a problem.
I mean, there's only so much truth to it. I mean, again, because now it's become trendy, now it's become like so-called popular, I guess, is what it really become. I'm like, this has obviously been going on for many, many years, so it's not why is now it's just surfacing. It doesn't really make a lot of sense if you really think about the whole picture of things.
Yeah, I don't really understand why it's suddenly become a trend, but it really is getting annoying because I've become more skeptical. In the beginning, I believed everything.
Ron,
and it's just strange that people's reputations, sometimes wrongly, are being damaged and losing jobs and status, and it's a shame if they are being victimized. The trouble is, we don't know sure who's being victimized. That's the issue.
Do you think we need to rewrite the laws or revisit the way that these investigations occur?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but all I know is I feel really bad for anyone who is being wrongly accused. And I pointed out to people, think of a college professor. You are a college professor, whether you have male or female students. Somebody could accuse you of sexual harassment because you give them a bad grade, in theory, at the end of the course. It could certainly happen. It's never happened to me, but how does one know it would not happen? And people can make up stories about you. I think anybody in any kind of work could face that possibility now.
Well, that's where I want to kind of jump in, because, I mean, basically, it does come down just to kind of, you know, BS accusations kind of thing. I mean, really, how do you really tell what's right and what's wrong? I mean, how do you really tell who's lying and who's not?
it's been very hard to tell. You know, there's some people obviously who are very guilty and very much involved in this, but I have a feeling some of these stories of some of these people that are public figures are not true, and I am concerned about that because it is ruining people's lives. And you know, it just makes me wonder about who can you trust. You can't really trust anybody anymore. How they're gonna, how they're gonna react to you if you do something they don't like, that they can just decide. Like, for instance, who can say that some of these women with these Hollywood people, that they came on to these, to these different people rather than the other way around, and they were rejected? And I'm not interested in fooling around with you. So maybe they're starting to get revenge on you in the opposite direction. It could be that.
I mean, even, at some point, people who read the news and, follow the, the social media, whatever, it's actually starting to, from my personal experience, it started to affect, actual lives. Like, it seems nowadays you can't even say hi to, to either anybody that you would, potentially like or whether or not. But then somehow I feel as though they'd be translated as you're trying to, come on to them, and then that could be taken as, in advance, I suppose, which, again, due to the current event, I guess that would be taken as a negative thing, which it seems really odd to me.
Yeah.
Is that a price we pay for the political correctness?
A lot of people are being heavily damaged by it. And again, some of them deserve it, but I don't think they all do.
Is it a price we're paying, Ron, for the political correctness and the desire not to offend people, that we've just gotten a bit too careful, and this may be an unfortunate circumstance?
I think you might be right on that, Adam. Yes. Yeah. There's always something else to have to be concerned about, because nothing ever can be just normal. Normality doesn't exist anymore. You notice that?
It would seem that way. I mean, we have people with their Facebook memes saying, "Welcome to the United States. How can we not offend you today?" Or I'm offended that you're offended. And a lot of that stuff is true. I mean, giggles aside, it seems like we've come down to that. And sometimes the byproduct may be less than pleasant. So let's hopefully we could just all get along. I think too many problems in the world right now. Let's all shake hands and at least try to be friends. It really does work wonders. Got a few minutes.
Unfortunately, our politics is so divided now.
Right.
Nobody crosses the aisle like they used to in Congress, literally and figuratively. Everybody stays on their side. As I think I said once before, the most conservative Democrat still votes more liberal, if you want to call it, than the most liberal Republican. In other words, Joe Manchin still votes more, on the so-called left side, and Susan Collins, although she's quite moderate, is still a conservative by comparison to Joe Manchin. So it's so there's nobody crossing the aisle, and that's a tragic situation.
Got a few minutes left to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor, joined by Brandon Oak in the studio. Before we wrap up, Brandon, anything else you wanted to ask the Professor about?
No, I think that pretty much clears up today's so-called episode, but I do appreciate being on here and your show as usual, and look forward to the next time.
And thank you, Brandon, for participating in our discussion today on The Talking Place, WWGH. Ron, we have a few minutes left and want to talk briefly about the California wildfires. It's become very serious. Financially, obviously, people being displaced from their homes.
Last June, I went to Los Angeles, first time I've ever been to L.A., and now I'm realizing the way things are going. At some point, L.A. may never be the same again. It depends how close it gets to the city. But we also went to the Reagan and Nixon museums, which are the northern and southern parts of the L.A. metropolitan area, and I'm worried that places like that and other areas there are endangered. And the governor, Jerry Brown, on the weekend, especially some Southern California, but even Northern California, there's going to be a lot of crisis in the future about fires and Santa Ana winds, and it's going to be a drier area on a much longer term basis. So it is something that's going to transform California, and probably in a negative way, unfortunately.
Do you think we've learned anything about natural disasters from the hurricanes, including the hurricanes that were very close to your home? Can that be used as a lesson as to how to deal with these events? In California, we're talking about the most populous state, millions of people potentially.
Yes. I heard that there was a fire burning of a football field every second at one point. I was shocked to hear that, There needs to be more of an agency, but I think it's going to be cut, actually. There needs to be some kind of recognition of the need to do more on the environment. Instead, we have a president who's trying to cut back on the environment and allow pollution. And I don't know what the answer is, but I think we're going the wrong direction on dealing with natural disasters, unfortunately. And like in Puerto Rico, more than 1,000 people now have shown died, but officially they say, I think 60 administrations did not do more sooner in Puerto Rico, and they really are ignoring Puerto Rico even now, and that's wrong. And that's why we're having a major movement to South and Central Florida by people from Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico will never be the same in population, and it will probably never fully recover economically.
We would agree, Ron, that President Trump's record on the environment and natural disasters, that isn't one of his strong points. Let's put it that way.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, for being with us today. Interesting discussion, as always, and Brandon Okosel joining in the conversation.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Brandon, for participating in the show and for inviting me.
No problem, Ron. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. And again, in advance, a very happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Adam Lepp here with a finer mid-morning coffee break, featuring Professor Ronald Fineman and, again, my special guest, Brandon Oak, here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.